As we wrap up 2017, we are extremely grateful that RetroFret has been sponsoring the Fretboard Journal podcast. RetroFret is one of the great vintage instrument stores in the world, and their Brooklyn showroom is packed to the gills with interesting rare instruments such as a 1919 Gibson Style O that just looks incredible and has its original case. They also have a 1971 Martin D28. I'm guessing that is someone's birth year guitar out there. And my pick of the week, a 1965 Galliant Grand Prix Model 3002. That is one of the great funky Italian electrics of the 1960s. You can find their entire inventory over at retrofret.com. You can reach out to them if you ever have any repair or restoration needs. These guys are some of the best in the entire business. And if you do reach out to them, please tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal's 180th podcast. I am Jason Verlini, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal. And as always, that is John Rauhaus playing in the background. He is one of our earliest podcast guests, and he is a dear friend of mine. Thank you, John, for letting us use your music on the Fretboard Journal podcast. We have a great show for you today. Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn came by the Fretboard Journal offices, and guess what? I wasn't here. That bums me out because, thanks to Bela, I decided to take banjo lessons when I was in high school. That probably paved the path for the Fretboard Journal. It definitely didn't pave the path for me being a good banjo player. I dropped out after about 3 months. But thank you, Bela, for the inspiration over the years. And thank you guys for coming into our office. Since I wasn't here, Scott over here did a video shoot with them, which we'll be posting on fretboardjournal.com very soon. And then he decided to turn the tables on them and have them interview each other for this week's podcast. So that is what you get to hear. A very sweet, very silly, very informative conversation these two had with each other for 20 or 30 minutes. And I'm very glad we've got it. I'm glad we could share it with you. I hope you enjoy it. Also over on fretboardjournal.com, you can still, of course, subscribe to the Fretboard Journal print magazine. We are wrapping up our 41st issue, which will be mailing out in January. Bela says he'd like to see more banjo coverage in our pages. What do you think? We've had our fair share on this podcast, but I guess we haven't had a ton in the print magazine as of late. Give us some feedback. As a reader-supported magazine, when you subscribe to the Fretboard Journal magazine, I want you to communicate with me and tell me what you'd like to see in the pages of our magazine. We have had so many stories and pitches and even magazine subjects come to us by just reaching out to us. And, you know, so many of our podcast guests as well have come through our little community here. So you can always email me at jason@fretboardjournal.com. I'd love your feedback. And maybe if you don't subscribe to the Fretboard Journal print magazine, email me and tell me why. Maybe there are things we could change. Maybe you want more banjo coverage. Maybe you'd like no banjo coverage. Anyways, our next sponsor today is Dying Breed Music. They are a very focused store. Lane is all about Golden Era flat tops from Martin and Gibson. And that's pretty much it. They have an issue-free, all-original 1939 Martin 0021 right now. They also have a long-scale 1934 Martin 0018 that was set up by John Arnold himself. That is ready to go. And they also have the guitar that I would chase after, a 1941 Gibson J35. Those always sound so damn good. Go to dyingbreedguitars.com to see Lane's entire inventory. And know that Lane is all about customer service, so if you ever have any questions, you want to talk about his consignment program, anything, just give him a call at 870-818-3434. He is super communicative. Before we get to our interview between Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn, I just want to wish everybody out there a very happy holidays and a happy new year. I know this is a stressful time for a lot of folks. I know it can be a lonely time. I hope that everyone takes care of themselves. I hope everyone is listening to music and getting rest. And if you need to reach out to anybody, you can always reach out to me. I'm at jason@fretboardjournal.com. You probably know that. But we can talk about banjos or guitars or life or whatever. You've had to listen to me ramble for the last 8 years on this podcast. I wouldn't mind listening to you ramble. Anyways, take care of yourself, everybody, and have fun. And I hope everybody's having a great holiday season. And here is our talk with Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn. Next week, our podcast is going to be featuring Del McCurry. So I hope everybody will tune into that. Happy holidays, everybody.
Make sure I'm at least twice as loud. Because I talk kind of like this.
Hello, hello, people. All right, podcast time.
Yep.
Let's do this podcast thing.
I'm Abigail Washburn.
And I'm Abigail Washburn.
And I am sitting next to Bela Fleck.
Wait, I'm Bela Fleck.
and I'm Abigail Washburn.
And it's podcast time.
Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast.
So, my first question for you.
Oh, no.
Why the banjo?
Oh, you're so cruel. No, really, let me.
Okay.
So, Bela.
Yes.
Why the banjo?
Are you naturally curly haired?
Are you naturally...
An ass?
An asshole.
Yes, it just kind of comes natural to me, in fact. Yeah. I work on it at times, but if I didn't work on it, I'd still be pretty good. Good ass.
Good at it. Mm-hmm. Okay, tell me.
Yeah. What kind of topics would you like us to discuss on the podcast?
I'd just like you to say how much you love the Fretboard
Journal. Oh, my gosh.
Every day, like word for word.
Twice. You know, I have a little pick to pick with the Fretboard Journal because, you know, banjo is an instrument too. And Fretboard Journal tends to focus a little bit heavily, if you ask me, on some of our less talented musicians, acoustic musicians, the ones that play the guitar because they're not good enough to play the banjo. So I was wondering if maybe a little more coverage of the banjo might be appropriate.
Who should we interview, Bela? Who should we interview for the
I'd like to start with Tommy Emmanuel. Tommy, don't you wish you were a banjo player? Don't you wish? No. We better start over.
Okay. Just because I play the guitar.
Brian Sutton, don't you truly wish you were a banjo player? I know he wishes
yes,
he was
Bela.
A banjo player because he does play the banjo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true.
Why would you play the guitar if you could play the banjo?
That's my question.
That's my question.
Mm-hmm. So what is one of the most ridiculous... perhaps hilarious things that has ever happened to you on the road as a touring musician?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would have to say it was the night that Bob Dylan opened for me. And it really happened. It really happened. We were Flecktones were playing in Montreux, Switzerland, and we were supposed to be the opening act.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But Bob's crew, after they had done their sound check, they said, nobody's coming on this stage. It doesn't matter who you've booked to open. No one is coming on our stage. So Bob Dylan played his set, and then they tore down their stuff, and we put up our stuff, and we did our show second.
How'd it work out?
It didn't work out well because all of the 2,000 people left except for like 9 people who watched us set up and then watched us play our set.
Mm-hmm.
So never open for Bob Dylan. That's my advice to
or
the guitar players
Bob
out
Dylan
there.
Never have Bob Dylan open for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So once upon a time, I was on the road with 5 musicians, and we traveled through the night to Knoxville, and we had a good friend, Todd Steed, who let us use his house. And we pulled up in our van at about 9 in the morning. Todd had already gone to work. He left the key for me. We all loaded in. We'd been driving all night. We go into the house. We all get in our jammies. We're so tired, and we each pick a little spot and you know, nest up and fall asleep. And about an hour later, I wake up to the sound of Kai downstairs going, you guys, get down here. Get down here right now. And Kai likes to play jokes, so I was kind of not going for it. I was like, I'm asleep, man, you know. And then I hear Poppy, Jamie Dick, go, you guys, it's serious, come down here. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't hear their voices anymore. And I was like, you guys, what are you... And then Raina, who's with me, fiddler, and I go downstairs, and we can't find anybody anywhere. And we walk out onto the back porch just looking for people, and all of a sudden we see everybody lined up on their knees with their hands up and 2 cops with guns pulled. And they said, get down, no! And so we got down our knees with our hands up, and it was just, you know, that moment where everything stops, you know. And he said, I want one person to talk! And I was like, I'll talk. And he said, what are you doing in this house? And I said, well, this is our friend's house, and we are traveling musicians, and we're just went to bed after traveling a long night. And he said, he got, you know, on his radio, and he said, they say there, we've got seven traveling magicians here. Seven traveling magicians. And the whole band was trying so hard not to laugh. And because we were scared out of our wits because they both had guns. And apparently they'd just come from a shootout. So
they had their reasons.
They had their reasons for being really nervous about this mm-hmm. situation. And apparently two people in the neighborhood had called thinking that we were thieves emptying out this guy's house. So they had their reasons. But
so this must be the most ridiculous thing that's ever happened to you on tour.
I would say so, yeah. Seven traveling magicians. And then they called it in. They called Todd Steed, but we sat there with our arms up. You know, like, do you ever do yoga where you have to hold up your arms for like 3 or 4 minutes? Like, it was really hard to hold up your arms that long.
You win.
That was pretty good.
That's
right?
Good. That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. What's the next topic?
The first time. What's the first time you ever got to put your hands on a banjo?
First time I got to put my hands on a banjo, my grandfather had bought me a banjo. I was 15 years old, and he got it at a garage sale because he knew I played guitar. He didn't know I really wanted to play the banjo. And then I got my hands on the banjo that weekend before I started high school and took the train home from his place in Peekskill, New York, back to the city. New York City, and there was a guy on the train who tuned it up for me and showed me
so
a couple
it was
of basic rolls.
On the train, like underground, or were you above?
No, this
ground?
Was the Hudson Valley line that goes along the river.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what did you play, or did you just kind of strum?
Oh, he started playing it for me and showing me stuff. It's very exciting.
Do you know who it is? Has he ever?
I've met him again, but I can't remember his name right now. Mm. But he had mutton chop. Facial hair, and he was a college student at City College. And then I started high school right next door to there, so I ran into, I think his name was Marshall. Marshall something, yeah. So that was pretty neat to have somebody tune it up for me right then and there, and then I was bit by the bug.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I don't remember touching a banjo until after I heard Doc Watson play, and I was always, and I also loved Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings once I started getting into the old time music, and I must have gone to a shop. I think it was a shop in Colorado Springs where I lived going to college at the Colorado College, and it was an old store. John, what's his name? He still has a music shop right there down on Tejon, I think it is. And so I just sat down on the, I feel like I remember a red carpet and pulled it off the wall and started playing A Good Time Deering.
Mm-hmm.
Just strumming it with my hands. And I just realized how good it sounded without having to know what I was doing. Just the open sound of it and the ring.
What about, how did Mike Snyder play into your banjo?
Oh yeah. I was on a road trip across the country with my, my boyfriend at the time, Bo Stapleton. And we were traveling through Nashville and we stopped at Grun Guitars and walked in. I wasn't assuming I'd see anything or find anything there, but I had my Good Time Deering that I'd had for about a year. And I went in there and I sat down with I couldn't believe this wall of vintage banjos that they had there at Grun. And I was kind of blown away by it, even though I wasn't obsessed with banjo really. I just really liked it. But I sat down with one of them on the wall and kind of in disbelief that I could hold this old thing. And then Mike Snyder just happened to be sitting there in the middle of the room playing banjo, and everybody was oohing and aahing over him. Like there was probably a group of 9 or 10 people. And then he kind of looked through the crowd and was like, hey, are you looking for a banjo? And I said, yeah, I am. He said, let me help you find one. Why don't I play a couple for you? And so he just started playing me these different banjos. And the one we ended up on was an S.S. Stewart. And he went up to Grun and he asked him for a deal and to throw in a free case, and I spent the most money I've ever spent on anything other than my truck that I had bought at that point, used old truck, and I think it was $800 or something like that.
And if you don't know Mike, he's a great comedian and banjo. He's a great banjo player too. Mm. Who's been on the Opry since.
I had no idea who he was.
Forever, yeah, for a long, long time.
And he's an incredible Clawhammer banjo player and
really, really good. Really good three finger player too. Mm. He came to me for lessons way back in, I think, in Newgrass days, and I gave him one lesson. He didn't need any lessons. Mm-hmm. He was great.
So are there things that you learned from guitar players that you play on the banjo a certain way because of guitar players you met?
Definitely. There's a lot of guitar stuff that works on the banjo or gets an idea rolling on the banjo. Mm-hmm. But I tried not to intentionally take guitar ideas. I try to get the musical idea of it, but I don't want to be a banjo player who plays a lot of guitar licks, but I try to get, if there's something about the lick that teaches me something about the fingerboard or is just very musical, then I'll try to figure it out and I'll try to learn all the inversions of it, the way that it relates to the banjo. For instance, like a Charlie Christian lick or a Tony Rice lick, things like that will just certainly show up because I think they're really good music, not because I'm trying to copy the guitar. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about?
I've learned just as much from saxophones, pianos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But guitar is the most natural.
Right.
Because we've got three strings alike. Second, third, and fourth.
Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, what's something from a saxophone that you...
Charlie Parker's An Oscar for Treadwell is an incredible track of his, and the solo is one of that I just particularly loved. And just by learning it, even just a measure at a time, it taught me a lot about the tuning of the banjo and how to play jazz lines. Mm-hmm.
I've never played the guitar. Never been a guitar player at all.
I used to regularly touch bass with a guitar, and I have a couple of really nice guitars.
I remember when you touched bass with a guitar when you were courting me. You remember that?
What are you talking about? Oh, that. The night when I was singing...
Jim Croce to me.
Jim Croce songs to you in the moonlight. Yeah, it's coming back to me. Yeah.
You kind of couldn't stop either.
Yeah, once you got me going, I was... I'll play guitar once in a blue moon, but it's really been years now since I've really tried to play. And I think the main reason I stopped because my arm didn't handle the flat pick very well, and I would get really sore playing it. And I got to where I think I was going to be a pretty good flat picker there for a while, but then again, it just didn't work. But if I left it alone and I didn't do it, banjo playing never bothered me. So I stopped, but I wrote a lot of songs on guitar.
I think that was a thing, like when I first moved to Nashville and was accepting my path as a musician in my early 20s, mid-20s, I saw that everybody kind of thought you had to write songs on the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt a little bit of pride about the idea that, hey, you can write songs on the banjo. Like,
yeah.
Why can't you?
And right.
Not a whole lot of people were writing songs on the banjo, and specifically to sing and play.
Well, I like to write
without
tunes,
anything else.
Tunes on instruments I don't play very well. Like, because it frees up your mental, it just frees you up because you don't go to all the things you're used to because you know how to play what you're hearing in your head. And so instead you make mistakes, and in the mistake process you find things that sound really musical, and then you start to stick to them. So I've written just a few songs on piano. I've written a lot of songs on guitar, yeah, and mostly because I don't know what I'm doing. And then I find things, and then eventually learn them on the banjo. In fact, I think I might have written Big Country, the main melody, on a guitar in the key of E, and then realized that it might work on the banjo, and then it turned into like a really strong banjo tune. But when I wrote it, it was just a melody, a vocal melody, so things like that. Then I would write on the mandolin, and it would be in the process of discovery, you start to write a song, and if you're quick enough to grab it before it goes away, it can be really good. So I think banjo worked really well for songwriting for you because you weren't playing very much yet when you started writing songs on the banjo. So everything was new, and just the sound of it was exciting, and it got just singing on top of it, and it just worked. But it's harder for me to write tunes on the banjo now after 35, 40 years because I pretty much can finish my ideas so easily. My technique is strong enough, and I'm good enough at playing what's in my head that...
You actually need new tools.
Yeah, if I go pick up something I don't, or throw it in a weird tuning, then I'm back to like, oh, I don't know what the notes are. Now I have to use my instincts to create a tune.
Well, that's always been exciting for me too, because in the old time tradition, there's so many different tunings, you know, that little satchel tuning, dead man tuning, mountain modal, standard.
They all sound very depressing.
They do, don't they? Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Into the shadow.
favorite banjo players? Ooh, let's see.
A lot of what I love about banjo playing, well, Bela.
Abigail's one of my favorite banjo players.
You know what I want to straighten up right here and right now is the fact that when we're introduced on stage or people write articles about us, they tend to lump me into the sum total of being one of the best banjo players on the face of the earth. And because I'm playing with Bela, I just want to lay it down right now. I like my banjo playing. I think it's great. But I am not one of the best banjo players on the face of the earth.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I am even better than him. No, I just think it's, I laugh every night when we're introduced on stage. Please make welcome to the stage two of the best banjo players ever on the face of the planet. And I'm like, yeah, thank you. Thank you.
But the thing is, she's really good, and she's really good at a lot of things that a lot of banjo players aren't good at.
It's just very specific what I do. You know? Like I'm not a.
But that doesn't mean you're not really, really, really good. Really easy to play with.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm good at what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But he is actually one of the most. You're just versatile and expansive, and you want to like master patterns that people have never thought of conglomerating on the strings of the banjo. And I'm not actually turned on by all that. That's not what I want to do, but I love that you want to do that, and I see what
that's
that
one
means,
of the neat things when we got together is she wasn't really interested in what I did in the slightest. And my mother was like, I think it's a little weird because she's probably just so in love with your music, like your playing. And I was like, well, Mom, the truth is the first time she saw me play, she left the show because she didn't like it, because she likes old time music. And when she heard it, she was like, this isn't what I came to this bluegrass festival hear, the Fleck tones. This is not what I'm into. And it's actually taken her a while to like what, not that you didn't like it, but to appreciate what I care about, because it's not what you naturally care about.
Right.
But I don't have any trouble caring about what Abby does. I like all the different colors and shades. I like Ralph Stanley. I like Flatten Scruggs. I like Tony Trischka. Mm-hmm. I like all of it, old time music, bluegrass, jazz, classical music. But I don't like all of it. I like things from all of it. I'm very picky about what I actually like, and I think I can be snobby about what I like a lot of us can be that have been playing it for a long time. But when I first heard Abby playing, she it was her demo, and she'd given it to me at a party long before we got together, and I put it on in my car, and I just started driving faster and faster. I got pulled over because I was like, man, this is really good. I really liked it. I just liked the honesty of her voice and the simplicity of her playing, and it was just very pure, and I had to walk the line. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all I'm getting at is that quality isn't about how busy or complicated you play. I mean, you can play really complicated and busy and be good, but you can also play complicated and busy and not be good. So I'm always trying hard to be good, since being complicated is one of my abilities. If I'm going to do it, I'm trying to do it in a way that I think is okay, and not just a shredding or just playing fast to play fast. At least that's my goal. And sometimes I succeed and sometimes I don't. But your life is
true.
Simpler.
Sometimes he does not succeed at being tasteful.
Yeah. Yeah. And people reward me for it, too. Yeah.
Okay, I'll talk a little bit about who I... So I love... I'm really drawn to old voices and voices from the past. And like I see a lot of CDs of people I love back there, and like Roscoe Holcomb, just the way he'll, and it often has to do with how people play so that they accompany their voice, or how their voice is inspired by what they're playing. So it's just like real profound relationship between the two. And so yeah, like a Roscoe Holcomb or a Doc Watson or a Sister Rosetta Tharpe or a Gary Davis. I love voices with very little going on too. I mean, I like hearing instruments played from other parts of the world too that sound like banjos. That's a really cool discovery that can really inspire what I do. Like the Mongolian, what is that called? Well, the horsehead fiddles, but also the rejek, the different things that are played throughout Central Asia and things like that. There can be just a lot of commonality there, and West Africa, the different instruments there, akanting and ngonis. And
you like stuff with that old pure sound,
old ancient
tones,
the ancient tones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what gets me.
I like that too. Mm-hmm. But I also like other stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Any final words?
Any final words?
No.
What?
I don't know. I just saw you.
Thought something was coming. I was looking for something. Trolling. I'm trolling around in there for something. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Plug the camp.
The camp. There's going to be a camp. I've actually intentionally stayed out of the teaching world for since the early days of my playing. The first 5 or 8 years of my playing, I taught a bit. And then I just got so busy doing that I didn't really have time anymore. And if I had time at home when I wasn't on tour, which was rare, I needed that time to write new music or to do my laundry or to not play music. So I didn't teach.
And music or do my laundry or not play. That's a good list.
It's true. It's true. But at any rate, I just was offered the chance to do. I always thought I would get back to it at some point because I really love it. I really do love teaching. I thought I would get back to it at some point. And at this point, somebody offered me a chance to put on a banjo camp and lead a banjo camp. So I'm going to do that for the first time this year and see how it goes. It's going to be called the Blue Ridge Banjo Camp.
Bela Fleck Blue Ridge Banjo. Let me say it so he doesn't sound like a douchebag.
Yeah. I would appreciate
it's
that.
It's called Bela Fleck Blue Ridge Banjo Camp. Bela Fleck Blue Ridge Banjo Camp. Bela Fleck Banjo Camp. Bela Fleck Blue Ridge Banjo
Camp.
Banjo
Camp. And I don't exactly know what's going to happen, but it's going to be great. It's going to be great. I have no idea what we're going to do, but it's going to be awesome. It's going to take place in Brevard, North Carolina, and I've got three other teachers so far that I'm really into. Tony Trischka, my teacher, is going to be there. He's a great all around banjo teacher. Kristen Scott Benson is going to do the traditional side of things, and Mike Mumford is going to also teach. He's a great banjo player, and he also can teach a lot about banjo setup as well. And there may be another teacher, but I'm expecting to do a lot myself too. And so, you know, a lot of people have been asking me about the things I do for a long time. And so it'll be a place where I can share some of that. But it won't all be on, you know, I won't have to carry everything. I'll have some great, great people there. And it's in August. It's, I think it's the 15th through the 18th. And we're just going to celebrate the banjo, you know.
How many people?
We're figuring around 120 for this first time. It's in a beautiful place. You won't mm-hmm. be camping out. And we're going to take applications. We're going to look at what everybody plays like and figure out who the right people are. If, you know, assuming that we get a lot of, if a lot of people apply, then that'll affect, you know, who we choose. If we have just enough people to do it, then everyone will get in. But we have to sort of figure out what the criteria is and what kind of camp it's going to be. And the goal is for it to be awesome again. But as we go along, you know, first we need to get a lot of things in place. And then we actually have time as the year progresses up till the camp to figure out everything that's going to happen. But I'm very inspired by Victor Wooten's bass camps and music camps that he's been doing in Tennessee. And he finds a lot of ways to kind of break outside of the typical things you do at a camp or an instruction lesson. And the broader, the bigger point about why we play music and what we're trying to do to break out of the ruts that we get into where we're just stuck. A lot of people feel really stuck as musicians from top to bottom, from beginners to, you know, the greatest ones. And I think that's an area I think I can help people break out of where they're stuck into another place. That would be a good goal. And then just also a meeting place for a lot of these people where we can all just celebrate what we think is great about the three-finger style. And eventually I would love for it to be also a clawhammer camp, just a bigger banjo camp where we cover a lot more things. But that would be down the line. First, we'll just get through this one and see what happens and what we can do better, and then we'll see whether we can expand it into something, you know, more comprehensive.
I'll share one thing. Bela is producing a record of me with one of my best girlfriends who's a guzheng player from China, so it'll be a banjo guzheng duo record and some singing, and that's really exciting. My friend Wu Fei.
And the guzheng is like a harp. It sounds like a harp, but it's on a table. and you pluck behind the string, behind the bridge, you can pull the notes and damn, it's just like a harp that
21 strings.
You can bend the strings and
open tunings.
And she's kind of a genius.
She's incredible.
And she likes to do, I think she was part of that Knitting Factory, John Zorn kind of scene. So she really likes to do some pretty esoteric, wild stuff, which is great. But this is a place where she's exploring some of her Chinese traditional roots and mixing
folk music
of her culture with the music Abby's bringing from our culture here. Mm-hmm. So it's a really neat meeting. And there's a lot of songs that are bilingual, mm-hmm. where they're singing in different languages at the same time and mm-hmm. alternating and singing in each other's language. It's pretty beautiful.
She'd be a neat person to have be a part of Fretboard Journal sometime, actually.
Doesn't have any frets.
I know, but that's it could be the lack of frets that's really deeply interesting.
Can't have that. No.
No frets.
But I think we should stop there because it's time to head back for sound check.
That's true.
Thanks.